1000-watt News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000-watt 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 11th of March, Anno Domini 2007, and you lucky people. You're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And we'll be bringing you news, views, stuff you can use, all kinds of interesting and important bits of information, and you can give us a call at the numbers you just heard, and we will put you on the air. What could be more exciting than that? Samsung said Wednesday that it has begun shipments of its first hybrid hard drive to selected OEMs and that retail shipments would begin soon. The new MH80 2.5-inch hybrid drives for notebook PCs will be available in 80, 120, and 160 gig capacities with either 128 megabytes or 256 megabytes of onboard flash memory for caching purposes. A hybrid drive is a regular hard drive with a bunch of flash memory for caching on it. And what that lets you do is keep a lot of the information on the flash section, and therefore, under normal system use, A, you get the data a lot faster, and B, particularly for laptops, it doesn't drive the drive as much, and so you get a longer battery life. It's, you know, measured in 5%, 10%, but still, that's certainly better than nothing. So,
and at this point, it's cheaper than the flash-only drives, which eventually we'll probably go to.
Exactly. Yes, in the long run, we will. Well, I now have that, of course, on my iPod. iPod Mini.
That was fun doing, though.
Yeah, a 4-gig flash drive, you can't put much of an OS on 4 gigs.
No, you can't. Well, you can put Linux
on it.
You
can put a really nice Linux on it, yep.
But taking those apart, it was rather unique.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me tell you what actually went on. I have this iPod Mini, which was dead. The hard drive had died. And I brought in and said, I need a replacement. What you can do is replace the hard drive. The 4-gig hard drives in the minis are exactly the same size and exactly the same pinouts as a CF card. So I bought a 4-gig CF card and I brought it in. And Dave seemed exceptionally excited about playing with it. So instead of giving it to Steve, I gave it to Dave because he'd never taken one apart. Oh, let me do it.
Yeah.
Okay. So I love
tinkering with old stuff like that.
Right. He put the drive in.
Dirty
and
broke.
Then,
I can't. You know,
yeah, right. There's not much you can do to it that it hasn't already been done. So he replaced the drive with a flash drive. So now it's actually a little faster, and the battery life is about 30% longer. And I put Linux on it just to play with it. I'm going to take it back off again since I've now played with it, and I'd rather have it just be an iPod. But
that's also a way to increase the capacity.
Right. I didn't do that because I had no idea, A, how well it would work, and yeah, B...
Will those hold a bigger flash drive, like an 8-gig?
They came in 6-gig models at the time. That the mini model has since been discontinued, but right. They did have a 6-gig version.
Yeah, oh, but so is there a limit on the BIOS, though, as to how big of a flash drive you could put in it?
I wouldn't think so, because the full-size iPods now have an 80-gig hard drive in them, and presumably it's a similar logic board, just a bigger size with more features for the video.
Now we know what we can try next time.
Right,
well,
exactly.
That was one of the big deals when the minis first came out. It was a 4-gig mini for, what, $300?
Right.
When a 4-gig flash drive was $600 by itself.
Right.
Yeah. So people were buying them, ripping out the flash drive. You sell the flash drive on eBay, and you make your $600, and then take another $300 and buy another mini. So you get a mini plus $300.
At any rate, I'm having fun with that. I'm going to reformat it to just be an iPod, and then I'll have a working iPod. Let's get to the phones. Our first caller is Dean. Our first caller appears to be Elaine. Elaine, are you there?
I'm here.
We're actually testing this little thing, and how are things going there? It is our daughter's birthday. Was Friday, and so is she having her little breakfast treat?
She is lounging in state jammies and donut holes, and Lord knows what on cable TV.
Yeah, right. Well, it's probably another CSI marathon.
Yeah.
That appears to be
she's
all.
She's got a little math homework looming in the background, though.
Uh-oh. Not math homework.
Yep.
All right. Well, anyway, thank you. I love you. Happy birthday to Miss Amelia Rose. It's her birthday week. See, it's
it. Yeah, she
her birthday
it out.
Is Friday, but she's
down,
going. She's
down least, from a birthday month already, though.
She's working on the birthday month, but she's got a birthday week coming. All right, our first caller, our first real caller, our first computer caller of the day is Dean from Brighton, New York. Welcome, Dean. What's your question?
Also, say it's my son's birthday today. He's 8.
Happy birthday to your son. See how that all works out.
It's time for birthdays. It was my boss's son's birthday last week.
Wait a minute, your daughter's birthday was Friday, Nick?
Yeah.
It was my brother's. He turned 50.
Wow.
My baby brother.
Your baby brother turned 50. My daughter's not quite 50 yet.
Just that acts like it.
You know?
Yeah,
right.
Well, no, they had him at work. They greeted him with a wheelchair.
Yeah.
And they had these banners, and they got him, you know, the over-the-hill parking sticker.
Right. All right, Dean, what's your question?
All right, by the way, I'm a long-time listener.
Thank you.
I appreciate you guys being in there all these years. It's been very helpful.
Thank you.
I have weird things happening to my Netgear wireless router. I have it hooked up to... desktop, that's where my my cable comes in, and I never seem to have a problem with my cable feed. Something happens, though. It worked fine for several months, and then started occasionally dropping the connection in the house, so if someone went to log on in the morning, it wouldn't be there just instantaneously, and I have to go fiddle with it and get it all back. Then it started happening very frequently, and almost every single day I'd wake up and have to reset it, and sometimes it would get very difficult to reset it. I'd have to reboot everything, either reboot the wireless router or reboot the computer. I tried dropping the, do an IP config, release and renew. Sometimes that would work. Sometimes I'd have to just reset everything twice.
You've got this wireless router, and the cable goes into the router.
Right.
And then your computers are all hooked up to it.
Yeah, now there's one.
Now, this only happens to the wirelesses, or it also happens to the desktop as well?
It happens to the desktop as well, and just my suspicion is there's something going on between the... There's only one hard connection, and that's to the desktop. That was the original primary connection. It's just a suspicion that it's something to do with the desktop talking over the wire to the wireless router.
Have you had them check out the modem?
Well, there's a couple of things to check.
I've noticed... just in the past few weeks, I don't know if you've run into this, Steve, but I've had a number of clients, the Roadrunner modem.
Yeah, I had to replace mine two weeks ago.
At least three or four clients have had to have them come out because all of a sudden they're losing their IPs and they got to reboot.
Yeah.
To re-get it, they get it for a while, and then they got to reboot again. And replacing the modems.
I could usually tell with the cable router when it went down because the lights would stop blinking. They'd stay on.
Any time that I've tried to just directly hook up a computer out of the modem, the cable modem, I've never had a problem acquiring that signal.
It could be just something is dying in your wireless router. How new is it?
It's only from last summer, like last July.
Try going to their website and see if there's a firmware update.
Yeah.
And if not, you may need a new router. If it's still under warranty, you can probably have them replace it under warranty.
The other peculiarity is that the wizard that drives that, the little piece of software that you run off the computer, it's acting funny now. It won't stay open. So now I can't even keep that open. I'll execute it. It'll flash on the screen, and it'll disappear.
Yeah, you might want to do some updates, see if that works. But, yeah, like Steve said, you might have a router that's on its way.
Try that wizard on another computer, too. Yeah, a lot of people don't think of their routers, and they're running 24 hours a day, all the time, all night long. We kind of joke, but it works. Just turn everything off and let it rest half an hour.
Yeah, right.
It doesn't make any sense, but it often works.
Okay. All right. I'll look for a firmware update, and I'll see where I go from there.
All right, thanks. We're going to take a quick break, but we will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and each and every one of you on the greatest computer show in the known universe at 16 minutes after the hour at Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Call Wham now at 222-1180.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 20 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites.
You know what? Glenn is giving me a hard time.
Yeah, which one of us is guns and which one of us is roses?
This is very good.
Yeah.
I'm the N.
Yeah, yeah.
So Guns and Roses.
Now, Glenn thinks the only thing I do on this show is just say my name, when realistically I'm the one who holds the thing together. You know what I'm saying?
You're the glue that holds us together.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and have you ever had one of those things where you set it down on the table and just falls right apart all on its own?
That's called crazy glue.
Yeah. Uh-huh. All right. On Monday, Intel, that would be tomorrow, Intel plans to start shipping a new version of its quad-core Xeon processor that will consume just 50 watts under peak load. The company outlined plans for the chips last week at a briefing for the press in San Francisco. The two chips are a lot cooler than Intel's other quad-core processors, which are rated at 80 watts and 120 watts, allowing them to be used in denser servers. Advanced Micro Devices, AMD, also ships a line of energy-efficient server processors that are rated at 68 watts of power consumption. Performance per watt is all the rage these days in the server market, as IT departments realize the impact on their electric bills by the power-hungry servers of a few years ago. Everybody's getting green these days, and they're realizing that if they can cut down from 120 watts to 50 watts, not only do they have to use less cooling and everything else, but everything becomes cheaper for them in terms of their electric bill.
You know, when I was at Kodak 10 years ago, they were just trying to get people to turn off their monitors, the old CRTs back then.
Right.
Figuring they could save $50,000 a year in electricity costs if you just turn your monitor off over the weekend.
Yep.
They weren't even trying to say every night, just over the weekend.
Just over the weekend. You go home on Friday, turn your monitor off. Just hit that little button. Absolutely. Yeah. So we should see in the future that'll be really useful for keeping us a little bit lower in the bills. Our next call.
Well, it's amazing when you consider it's a 68 watt, power consumption in the chip. You know, that's half of an average light bulb.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And for that, you can run your whole, and it's a quad core processor.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah. Our next caller is Billy from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Billy.
Hey, how you guys doing?
We're good. How are you?
Pretty good. Pretty good to get them coming to work an hour earlier, huh? Isn't it great?
What could be more exciting than that?
Hey, I didn't have a problem with any of my computers. They just automatically switched to the time.
So excellent.
Hey, listen, my question, I'll get right to the point, is when I go on, after I'm on the Internet Explorer, I go on to my favorite sites. It seems like every favorite site that I click on, it brings up two of the same thing. And I'm like, why is that? So I got to delete one. Is there a reason?
Are the favorites listed twice, or they just brings up two windows?
Well, when I click on favorites, it gives me my vertical list. It doesn't have two vertical lists. Just
you
one.
Might... You might have changed the sensitivity on your mouse, so when you're clicking on it, I've seen this happen, and you think you're clicking, once, but you might be clicking twice, and that's why it thinks it's got to open up two versus one because of the sensitivity of the mouse.
But when I go on the Internet Explorer, it only opens up one. When I go on all the sites when I'm on it, it's only one. It's only one of my favorites. It brings up two of the same thing. Like I go on like San Diego Padres.
Your favorites are in Internet Explorer, so that confuses us a little. What favorites list are you talking about?
Like when I go to a nice site and I want to save it, I'll hit favorites, organize favorites, and add to list and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just saying, whenever I click on it, it brings up two of the same things. Down at the bottom, it'll say two. On my taskbar on the bottom, and then I just delete one of them, like AltaVista or whatever, and then it only has one. Why am I getting two? On my favorites and nothing else.
But when you pick the favorite from the menu, you only get one. Only when you pick it from the list in the favorite sidebar.
And you're only clicking once, you're not double-clicking?
Yeah, one time. These are favorites that I've already saved. Like I say, I'm looking at a site or whatever, and I like that, so I click the favorites, add the favorites, and then it's saved.
Right.
And then later on, I'll turn the computer on, I'll go to my favorites, I'll find that thing, I'll click on it. You don't even have to be online. I can just click on it, it automatically goes online, and then it just brings up two of the same things. I don't see two, but it says two down at the bottom.
So it's opening two windows.
Yeah,
it
sounds like it's double-clicking instead of single-clicking.
Yeah.
I'm only clicking once. Should I get a different mouse?
Well, double-check the sensitivity of the mouse.
Your double-click speed might be set too low.
Yeah, in your control panel under mouse settings.
And also, the button can eventually wear out, so it thinks you're clicking
more than
once. Well,
I got it at Goodwill for like 50 cents.
That could be. That could be why it was at Goodwill.
Yeah, it might be time to actually spend, a dollar.
Well, I got a $2 one for Dell. I might plug that one in.
There you go.
Yeah, see what happens.
So basically, you said sensitivity what now? Understand?
Well, there's a double click speed on you tell the computer how fast a double click is. It may be set too short, so you think you're single clicking, and the computer thinks you're double clicking.
Only on favorites, nothing else.
Yeah, give it a shot.
Otherwise, I would replace the mouse personally.
Yeah, 50-cent mouse.
That's the first thing to try.
Yep. Yeah. Our next caller is Bob from Greece. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
Morning, gentlemen. On my my wireless internet, when it was originally set up, the person that set it up set it to a WEP, 128?
Yep.
Yeah.
And I've been having trouble with it. I've worked with Frontier, and they did a good job with me getting it solved. Well, one of the techs I work with had me reset it to WEP 64.
Yeah, 64-bit.
And I guess I'm not really comfortable with either of those. I keep hearing about WPA, and I'm wondering, is this 64? Should I go to 128? Should I try this?
Well, 128 is certainly better than 64. WPA, WEPN and WPA are two methods of encrypting the traffic on a wireless network so that other people, A, can't read it, and B, can't jump onto your wireless router.
Mm-hmm.
WEP is the older standard. WPA is the newer standard. 128 is certainly better than 64. Pretty much anybody with a watch chip can break 64.
Okay.
So 128 would be better. WPA would be even better if your router and your computers support it.
Yeah, that can often be the problem. If you have one older computer on your network that may not support WPA, then you have to set all of them to WEP.
Yes.
Are you talking about wireless computers? I got
right.
two wireless
right.
and two hardwired.
Yeah.
The hardwires don't matter, right?
No, don't
right.
matter at all.
And yeah. once you switch it from the 64 to the 128, now you've got to go around and put in the WEP key.
Right, it'll be a different key length.
Key length
on all
for
the other
each
machines.
Machine.
For each, even the wired ones?
Yeah.
No, not the wired ones, just the wireless ones.
Just the two wireless ones.
Right.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. So if the computers and the router both support WPA, that's the better one to do. And now there's the new WPA2, which is even better.
Okay, I'm not sure. It's a Frontier modem, so I know WPA's on there because one of the fellows...
No, your modem... Well, is the wireless coming through the modem?
Well, through the speed stream thing they gave me.
Yeah. Certainly the speed stream will do it. So the question is, will the laptops do it?
And it depends on what card they have. Try it and see.
Right. Take a look through the documentation for it and see what it
says.
Yeah,
you gotta have to check because
probably your best bet.
Well, they've also got a password on it.
We were trying to put a Linksys Ethernet bridge, a wireless Ethernet bridge, on a computer. It only supported WEP. The Linksys wireless router we had supported WPA, so we had to shut everyone down to get this bridge on.
Right.
From the same company.
Right. We're gonna take a quick break. The mighty Glenn Lamberts is in to do news, weather, sports, all the good stuff. You'll be hearing his mellifluous tones in just a moment. We'll be back on the other side of that with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you on the greatest computer show in the known universe. And say it with me, everybody. That is Soundbite. Across the nation, millions of people are saying Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton. Now, can anybody in there except for Steve name who this is?
Van Halen.
Aww.
Might as well.
See?
Aww,
at 33 minutes
come
after
on,
the hour.
Glad you didn't know.
That was it. I'm not even a Van Halen fan.
But is it Sammy or
one.
Dave? That's the question.
Yeah, well, yeah, nobody gets giveaway when they go, you know, that... I did that pretty well.
That's
didn't
Dave.
I? Actually, Glenn, you did. I'm very impressed. That was not half bad, actually.
You remember, I came through the 60s, and I remember it somewhat.
Well, then I don't know what you think you were about.
You know, I was the genetic experiment for my family, and I wound up, you know, making it through.
D8, all right. Welcome back. Here's an interesting thing. There was, back in early February, key parts of the backbone on the internet were attacked. By a distributed denial of service attack on the domain name system, which is the thing that actually translates from all those names that you type in, like www.soundbites.org, www.asknick.com. That's asknick.com. Oh, man, you're quick on the trigger.
He's on it.
Don't ever doubt me.
Never.
Ever.
He is in control of the button.
He is there. And at any rate, the idea is that you understand names, generally speaking. The internet only understands numbers. And the domain name system translates between the two. And it was attacked in February by some people who figured they could take down the internet by doing that. Well, as it turns out, there was a shield. A new shield was put up on it. Software that was designed specifically to protect the root servers from that. During the attack, which lasted almost 8 hours, 6 of the 13 root servers that form the foundation of the Internet's DNS were targeted. However, only 2 were noticeably affected. Those 2 did not have the shield installed because the technology was still being tested. So we know that the shield works, and we know that without it, there's a problem. So for those of you who noticed that the Internet was horribly slow in February, that's most of the reason why the actual installation and testing of this shield, and then the fact that it apparently actually worked. There were a bunch of denial of service attacks on the DNS routers in 2002, and that's when this program, Anycast, was developed. So it's nice to know, because if the DNS system did go down, websites would be unreachable, email would be undeliverable. That's the whole point behind these things. They keep the Internet running, so it's nice to know that they're protecting them and that life will go on for those of us who cannot live without the web. Our next caller is Paul from Dansville, New York. Welcome, Paul. What's your question?
Thank you very much. I wanted to give you a quick update on help you gave me a few weeks ago. I had a problem with a new monitor that didn't talk with the computer and set up the right resolution, and I did go out and get a new graphics card to a tune of a few dollars, and, but it does work very nicely, so I thank you for that advice.
You're welcome.
The problem I'm having is I am finally in the process of setting up my home network. It's all hardwired, and I've got 2 desktops that I've started the network with. And one is talking with the other just fine and reading the files on it, but the other one is not talking to the other one, if that makes any sense. So one talks to the other, but the other one doesn't talk to the first computer.
Right.
All right. What OS are on both of these?
They are both XP. XP Home.
Okay, XP
Home. Media Center.
All right, so they're both set up within the same work group.
Yes.
Yeah, that's one of the first things to check, is make sure they're all the same work group.
Yes.
The hard drives are being shared on both?
No, I just wanted to share my document.
Yeah, you have to specifically set a folder to be shared. It can be the whole hard drive or any specific folder.
Yes.
But if you have nothing shared, then the other machine won't ever see it.
Yeah, I set the My Documents folder to be shared on both of them.
Okay.
Do you log into both of them with the same username and password?
We're terrible. We don't use username or passwords to log on to our computers. Yeah, we'll get whipped for that one.
Yes, you will.
So when are you going into My Network to browse the network, or are you typing the address?
Using My Network.
Try typing the address. Go to start, run, and it's /// and the address of the other computer.
Okay.
And that logs directly into the other computer through the networking layer. Sometimes browsing just doesn't work.
Okay. Or you can do a search, and you can do a search and then say for computers.
Yeah.
If you know the other computer's name, you can type the name in and it'll find it.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, but that's the way to do it. Generally speaking, /// in the name of the system, another /// in the name of the share, whatever you've called the share.
The folder name you're sharing out, yeah.
My docs or whatever.
Yes.
Yeah, if you don't put that last folder name on, you'll get a list of what folders you want to share sometimes.
Right.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah, and on the search, it'll just find that computer for you, and you can click on it, and then from there, select the folder that's supposed to be mapped to that particular machine.
There you go. Thanks, Paul. Our next caller is Julie from Webster, New York. Welcome, Julie. What's your question?
Well, thank you. I'm a relatively new computer user. I've learned so much from you guys. Thank you. I have a question.
That's scary.
Pardon?
That's scary. You're actually learning something from us?
Yeah, I am. I listen religiously. I have a question on JavaScript. I have a Gateway laptop that has Windows XP. I'm finding, and I also have Norton Internet Security, the 07 version. I'm finding that JavaScript was recently coming in that lower left-hand corner on some of the incoming emails, and now I'm finding it whenever I go to my inbox. Is it something I need to get rid of, or can I ignore it? And if I need to get rid of it, how?
Well, here's the thing. When you get JavaScript in an email, it's one of two things. Either someone has sent you one of those cutesy little things that just annoy the living patoot out of me.
Oh, I get lots of those.
Oh, my God. Or it's somebody trying to break into your system.
Okay.
Now, what are you using for your email?
NetZero.
I'm not familiar enough with them. Talk to either their tech people or look through their options and see if you can turn off JavaScript in the email.
Are you using, does NetZero have its own email client, or are you using Outlook Express?
Outlook Express.
That's your problem.
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
really?
There you go.
Right.
Okay.
How do I get rid of that?
NetZero is your internet provider.
You just download.
I thought you were doing a web. No.
You just download Thunderbird, install that. It will import all your emails, all your email settings. Just use that from there on. And you're going to be good as gold.
And in Thunderbird, you can turn off JavaScript in email. And that's really what you want to do. And tell all your friends to stop sending you that junk. We're going to take another break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you at 40 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Huey Lewis.
Name well, that tune.
Huey Lewis.
No.
Nick?
I have no idea.
Steve?
I know the song. Give me a second.
I don't listen to music.
Hello, it's Dave Matthews Dave Band, Matthews Ants Band. Marching.
Yep.
Oh, thank you. Now, see, if my friend Bob had been here,
yep.
He'd know them all. He's got everything Dave Matthews has ever
The guy that
recorded.
Dumped his RV waste tank on the bridge and caught the boat that was underneath.
Apparently, you know, WHAM is reporting that the lead singer to Boston passed away. You know, the group Boston?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Rogers, what's his name?
Literally.
Used to know it.
All right. Anyway, we're back. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
Go ahead.
Yep. I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton. Glenn
Are
goes,
we doing that
they
now?
Have two hits?
Yeah, right. What was the other one? 45 minutes after the hour.
It's one of my favorite bands in the 70s.
Boston?
Yeah.
All right.
More Than a Feeling.
All right. Okay. Well, good for you. It's good to know you have something going on there.
We were just a, what was that? It was just a simple band out of Boston on the road trying to make ends meet.
Yep. All right. Pornographic spam. Oh, now Steve's paying attention. Dropped off to an all-time low in February as spammers concentrated on health-related products and other general product pitches, according to a report from Symantec. Similar to software, spam is also increasingly being localized. Symantec report on spam also said there was a rise in gambling-related spam in German, Italian, and French, while previously it was only mostly in English. Symantec drew the conclusion from its own data, as do many security vendors that publish trend reports based on their own monitoring methods. Pornographic spam comprised just 3% of the total amount of spam last month, the lowest figure ever recorded, Symantec said. Overall, about 70% of the email messages monitored by Symantec were spam, half of which originated from computers in North America. Improvements in blocking and filtering methods have driven spammers to use new techniques to get into inboxes. Some 38% of the spam sent in February used images and messages, which makes it more difficult for security software. Messages appear to be more unique, allowing them to bypass a filter. Spammers are also using text slanted at upward or downward angles. That method hampers optical character recognition technology, which tries to read the text within images. So one of the reasons that we're seeing more spam is that spammers are getting cleverer. We'll catch up, but it's a game of leapfrog, and we're behind right now.
It was Brad Delp. He was 55.
Thank you. Going back to a conversation we had 40 minutes ago.
Well, yeah. Boston has changed their website. You know, we've just lost the nicest man in rock and roll.
Yeah, yeah, there you go. Yeah. Our next caller is Jim from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Jim. What's your question?
Hi, guys. Hope you're peachy, Nick.
I am. I'm peachy. Thanks, Jim.
Right. Yeah, it was Brad Delp, and just before Eddie Van Halen died, he went into rehab the other day, so he got lucky, too. The other thing is, with AVG, I'm having no problems with it, except every time I restart my computer, all the red flags come up, and I have to re-download it.
I've been having that lately, too, on one of my computers. Actually, my Mac, running Windows. And I uninstall AVG and reinstall it. It works fine for a week, and then start saying it's all out of date and won't install any updates.
Right, yeah. It only happens every time I shut down, which I... I only do every few days, and then I have to go. It doesn't take long, but I was just wondering. So it's just the way it is. Then.
Yeah.
Well, it shouldn't be. Then I haven't had time to trace down exactly what the problem is.
You've tried uninstalling, reinstalling? You're running 7.5?
Right, correct. And, everything works fine. Just like Steve said, when I shut off the computer, once every 3 days, mm-hmm. and turn it back on, the red flags come up that I'm not up
yeah,
to date.
Something got hammered in the registry, and the only way that I found to correct that is literally, and which I don't recommend for you, is going into the registry, and you got to manually remove every entry.
You know,
unless you've done that, I do not recommend it, because one false delete, one missed, you know, deleted entry could mess up your whole registry.
Okay,
and then cause Windows not to work at all.
Yeah, so
yeah, I agree. It's just a minor inconvenience. Yeah. It takes a minute. And one other thing is, I did use the I got rid of that Norton. That was horrible. That
yeah,
good security. And even though you run that uninstall Norton uninstall tool that you go to
right.
Google and get, I still find files that say and you know.
Right,
yeah,
you're going to have to remove those by hand. Got to take a quick break. Back in just a couple minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco. 50 minutes after the hour at Soundbites, 1180 WHAM.
One thing I know, it's doing.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 54 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites.
All right, kiddies.
Tom Schlotz and Bruce Delp, yeah.
All right, kiddies.
Brad Delp, yep.
Sit back, relax, put on your little footy jammies, grab your cup of hot cocoa and your teddy bear, and sit in a little semicircle on the floor, Indian style. Because if we can wake him up and he'll stop drooling, it's time for Story Hour with Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave?
Hello.
Uncle Dave?
Yeah.
All right, there we are.
All right, two things I want to cover this week. One, for your folks that are still running, say, Windows 98 or Windows ME, because they didn't put out a patch for this great daylight savings time issue, the best thing and easiest thing I can tell you there is if you go double-click on that little clock down in the lower right-hand corner, bring that up, and you'll see down in the window that it opens up for adjusting the time in that. That's where you can bump your clock ahead 1 hour. You're also going to see a little button, a radio check mark that you can uncheck that says use daylight savings time. Because they're not doing the updates for your older operating system, just uncheck it. Then you can manually, you know, change it and it won't, you know, in another, 3 weeks, ask you again, do you want to change it? Because it thinks that, you know, you're on daylight savings time. So by unchecking it, it won't bother you anymore and asking you for that.
Now, a couple of people put out some patches on the Mac for older OSs because Apple's only going back to 10.3. I'm surprised someone hasn't done that for 98.
98 is no longer supported. All right, the other big pet peeve that I was...
Here we go.
Explaining to you,
gentlemen, start your engines.
All right. One thing that we do over at our company, I think we're one of the few, is we get into, at least we try our best, and we've got a pretty good track record of data recovery. Now, I've had a situation where people bring it in, and then they want to start negotiating a price with me. They're the ones, well, it should only take you this long, or it should only do this. Well, wait a minute. Do you negotiate with your doctor if he's going to operate on you and say, well, can I get a better price? The time,
or since it usually takes 6 hours, can you do it in three at half for half price?
Yeah. I mean, the time and effort that what folks don't understand, sometimes it can take to get data off a machine.
Especially something like that, which is open-ended. You know, reinstall the operating system. Well, that's about an hour. You know about how long that's going to take.
Well, the thing of it is, too, is a lot of them, you get them because the drives aren't working correctly to begin with, and we have to sit there and the drive will spin up for maybe 5-10 minutes, and then it dies. You got to let it cool off and start it back up again. Focus on it for that 5-10 minutes to try to get some more data off. It dies, so you got to wait another, 15-20 minutes, bring it, spin it back up. Meanwhile, you could be working on other things, but you're still focusing on, I got to restart this one. That is all time and effort. So don't argue with us. You know, if we say it's going to be a certain amount, Don't argue with me. I'm not trying to,
And a lot of times
put the shaft to the public.
We don't know how long it's going to take. That's part of the problem.
Yeah, and we're trying to offer a fair price for our services, so I'm not going to hose anybody.
And especially something like data recovery. We've talked about Drive Savers in the past. They're a commercial data recovery service in California. They have a clean room, guys in white space suits and an electron microscope. They take your drive apart and literally look at it. Is this bit of rust pointing up and down, or is it pointing left and right? And you're looking at $1,000 minimum.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, that's what I was telling some of these folks. So, I'm relatively cheap. If you go to a professional, it's going to cost you a lot more. Well, I had somebody else say that they could do it for a couple hours and go for it. If they think they can do it.
Right.
Well, it depends on how badly damaged the drive is.
Right. When people used to start to try to negotiate with me on price, my price would go up. Like when my daughter was a kid, bet in 15 minutes. Oh, Dad, 20? 10. Oh, okay, 15. No, now it's 10.
Yeah, I did that with my girls.
Well, but I used to do it with customers, too. This is probably going to take about 3 hours, probably going to cost you $150. Oh, can you think you can maybe do it in 2 hours for $100? Okay, it's not going to take 4 hours. It's going to cost $200. I'm sorry, you're done. Yep. That's it. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, it is.
Well, all right, we're going to take a quick break.
And we understand your data's important to you, so back it up first, and then
if you back up your data, this would not have been a problem. Yeah. All right, we're going to take a quick break. The mighty Glenn Lamberts is once again in to bring you, you'll hear his mellifluous tones, bringing you the news, the views, the stuff you can use. We'll be back on the other side of all of that with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with Rob Linton, with each and every one of you. We'll take a look at the poll. We've got more news. We've got all kinds of fascinating things going on. But you're going to miss it if you disappear, so stick with us. Stay here at Wham. If you're on the line, stay on the line. We will get to you. If you're not on the line, I don't know why not. You should be. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you at 59 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Here comes Glenn.
Thousand-watt News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000-watt 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And it's 7 minutes after the hour. What was that all about?
This is a little inside joke, you know what I mean? He thinks that's all I do is just jump on and say my name.
What people don't understand, they can't see, is that when we do this thing, you're in that room, he's over here, and he just grabs the mic and he brings it up to his face like he's taking a shot of whiskey or something. You know, I go,
smacked himself in the head a couple of times, too.
Yeah. Maybe I am taking a shot of whiskey.
Well, maybe you should. I'm sorry.
Didn't mean to interrupt the flow.
No, what flow?
Yeah, true.
All right. I don't know that there's a person listening to the sound of my voice who doesn't know about the kerfuffle we've had with daylight savings time here in the U.S. and Canada and numerous other regions around the world.
Wait a minute. What was that word?
Kerfuffle.
Explain, Lucy.
It's like a brouhaha, only less.
Okay.
Okay.
You had to explain.
Right. Obviously, what's happened is it's a 3 week earlier start, a 1 week later finish. A lot of devices got updated, but a lot didn't. Cell phones, set top boxes, they get theirs time from the upstream provider. Most of us had to get our fixes on other devices via a system update. For most of us, that's not a problem. Do the update and you're done. But for systems administrators, they had a rather rough go of it. A lot of systems didn't update correctly. Exchange. That's a special problem with calendaring software. If you have you save an appointment or event in that three-week period, you're likely as not to be an hour off. So our poll question this week was about daylight savings time. We do have a poll every week. At our website, soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Last week's poll was about search engines, which is your search engine of choice. We had a news item about that. 365 of you voted, making it number 71 on the all-time hit list. Not shockingly, the number one choice at 82% was Google. In second place, way back at 5% was Yahoo. Other
4%. What is this search you speak of? 3%. Ask.com, 2%. 2% for Metacrawler. 2% for Microsoft Live Search. And two of you like AltaVista. This week's poll, of course, is about daylight savings time. The question is, I had problems with daylight saving time. Yes, but only at home. Yes, but only at work. Yes, at work and home. No, I run Windows. No, I run Linux. No, I run a Mac. And no, we don't do DST. So far, we have had 83 votes. 47% of you said, no, I run Windows, followed by 12% who said, no, I run Linux. 11% run a Mac. 11% don't do DST. Only three of you had a problem both at work and at home. So leave us your vote. When you're done with that, of course, below the poll, you will see a yellow box with a link that says give us your opinion. Click on that. It will take you to my website, asknick.com.
That's asknick.com.
Oh, nice. Nice. Put down the
I was trying to find something else, and I just couldn't find it. You caught me off guard.
I caught you off guard. I've been talking about the poll for 4 minutes, and you know we get to that point where I say,
that's asknick.com.
That's a little better. See, there you were there right there with me, where you can enter your opinion, because we know that you don't particularly like just clicking a button. No. You want to be able to say something.
Want more.
Right. So you can enter your opinion. So far, 10 of you have. We've already started, of course, the Linux Flame Wars, but a bunch of other stuff is in there as well. So check it out. Check out my website. I do a newsletter. I have forums. I do all that cool stuff. Then come back and check out soundbites.org, where we also have forums and all kinds of interesting things that go on.
And the archives have been fixed again.
Again.
So now the new last two tracks will download for you. They were up there, but the podcast feed wasn't working right.
Oops. Yeah, I don't know what that was about.
Well, it was a combination between the code and the title. I had the title of the file different than the name of the file, and that apparently screwed it up.
Oh, I see. But now you fixed that, and it's all good.
Well, sort of. I fixed the title. I re-uploaded it, but when it downloads now, it still has the old title on it.
But at least it downloads correctly.
Yeah. At least it downloads, really right. So when you download the March 4th episode, it's going to say February 4th. We know that. You can change it to March yourself. It is the March 4th episode.
There you go.
But at least the files are coming again.
Yeah, that's what counts. Yeah. All right. Yeah. All right. So we're good with that, and we'll go back to the phones, and our next caller is Jim from Victor, New York. Welcome, Jim. What's your question?
Hey, guys. How you doing this morning?
Peachy, how are you?
I'm doing great. Quick question for you. I had a server upgrade done here at our company, a mirror server. I don't know a whole lot about it, but I went in. My Microsoft Outlook now is being run off that server. I used to be able to just type in the first letter of a first name of somebody I was going to email to, and now it's completely gone. I've got to re-list or I got to re-input all of the email addresses. Is there a way that I could... is everything gone off my system now, or do I got to redo this, or is there?
Well,
any way
normally
to save?
They would move. So you're saying your contact list is simply gone?
Yes.
All right.
But they do move. It sounds like they moved to Exchange.
Yeah, they moved.
Well, the contact list is stored on the local computer.
Not necessarily.
I don't really know what happened, and here I am. They did it Friday when I wasn't here, and so here I am in the office on Sunday, and everything's gone.
Well, there may be. Well, you'd think they would have sent out an email that said, here's what we did. And
save your contact list to your local hard drive. Right. Yeah.
Right. In a lot of cases, it is saved up on, depends on how they set it up. It could be saved up on the Exchange server. And the theory is they should have moved it over for you. And if they didn't, my only
emails.
Hope is that they have a backup somewhere.
Mm. Well, it should still be, if you're running Windows XP, Jim?
Yes.
Yeah, it should still be under Documents and Settings. They should be able to still... locate it.
Yeah, see, there's the corporate address book, and then you have your personal address book, which is usually
right,
a separate file.
Right, but if you put everything in the corporate address book, and they lose that.
Yeah.
But see, that's a hidden file.
So it might still be there
for the
somewhere.
Outlook. So yeah, you normally the average person doesn't see it. That if you go into Documents and Settings, you gotta.
But that's
unhide.
Only if it's your personal address book.
Yeah.
If it's the corporate address book,
yeah, that's
saved in
He might be hosed.
Well, it reminds me of an old story I read.
Are you glad you went in on a Sunday?
Yep.
It's just so frustrating.
You could be home.
I believe this is God's way of telling you, just go home, deal with it tomorrow.
All right, I'll try and call the IT guys Monday and just hammer on them.
There you go.
Let us know how you made out.
All right, thank you, guys.
Well, it reminds me of a story I read about a service tech that was installing software in a company, and he got to this one machine, and the owner wasn't around. So, you know, like Nick's old story, you could guess the password.
Right.
And he's trying to install this program, and there wasn't enough space free in the hard drive, so he emptied the trash and installed the software. An hour later, an irate person calls him up. What'd you do with all my files? What files? The ones I was keeping in the trash.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right, our next caller is David on a cell phone. Welcome, David. What's your question?
Good afternoon, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Got a question. I got a couple of weeks ago, I went ahead and I got this modem. It's like a cell phone modem that's USB, plug it in my computer, and I have internet because it's
right.
The country. And the reason why I got it was I wanted to originally get the satellite, but, you know, claimed that they were getting satellites from between 600 to 800 kbs. And, I'm an avid downloader. I had Roadrunner in the past. You know, I've had dial up. And, when I dial a particular place to a particular speed, go to the library with the computer with my network card there, and it's like 2-3 times as fast. But my question is when I go to the speed thing, and it tells me that I am capable of downloading at 1 megabit, how come I never see them speeds when I download at these particular websites?
Well, because that speed...
When I know that I can get them faster, if I go to the library.
That speed is based on that specific server at that specific instance. If you run the speed test 5 minutes later, you get a different answer.
Yeah.
It depends on the network traffic, how many other people are on that server, well, how many things are between you and it.
There's also the fact that just in the short time you've been talking to us, you've cut out 3 or 4 separate times.
Oh, I.
When that happens with the cell modem, it has to resend that bit. So you could be cutting your speed easily in half.
Depending on your location,
if you get this kind of service, your voice is not terribly clear to begin with, and for a modem that's confusing, and then cutting out means it's got to resend all that stuff. So it is very possible that while you can theoretically get 1 megabit per second, you're down to half of that.
Could you tell me if I would see faster download speeds with a satellite service? Then, like 100. The fastest I've downloaded, I can see if you add them all up, is like 150 kbs. That's the fastest I can get any data.
Now, is that?
Well, that's on. Well, who's your cell phone provider?
Well, it's EVDO. Which is Sprint.
Well, EVDO was Verizon, and Singular had Edge, and apparently Sprint's using EVDO too. If you're in the right area of the cell phone tower, you can get up to 1.5 megs.
My modem says that I'm at the EVDO revision A, which apparently on their chart is like the middle of the ladder.
Yeah, but the chart is the maximum possible you could get, not what you will get. And particularly with the cutouts that I'm hearing just in your voice right now.
Well, I'm in Henrietta now. Yeah. I live in Lyons, so that.
Well, a satellite could be faster because it uses a bigger dish, but it generally has to be a stationary dish. Although we did have a customer that put a dish on his RV, and he said he could drive about an hour before he had to stop and re-aim the dish.
Wow.
Well, no, it would be for my home. I would definitely mount it permanently. But I just can't see that it's the same price per month, and I just can't see why I would stick with something that's slower than if satellite is faster. Maybe
that's the difference between them. With satellite, it's a semi permanent dish. With cellular broadband internet, it's for business travelers who are always moving around and don't want to take an 18-inch dish with them.
You may well get a faster speed, but from what you're saying, it doesn't sound like it would be any slower. So. It certainly couldn't hurt to give it a try. We got to take a break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you on Soundbites at 19 minutes after the hour on 1180 WHAM.
Being even better.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. For those of you who've been...
And Boston's greatest hits.
There you go. For those of you who have been using JPEG photos, the format for JPG photos, for the longest time, Microsoft is submitting a new photo format to an international standards organization that says it offers higher quality images with better compression. This format, which is called HD Photo, which, by the way, used to be called Windows Media Photo, is taking aim at the JPEG format, which is a 15-year-old technology still widely used in digital cameras and image applications. Both formats take images and use compression to make the file sizes smaller, so more photos can fit on a memory card. During compression, however, the quality of the photo tends to degrade. Microsoft said HD Photo's lightweight algorithm causes less damage to photos during compression, with higher quality images that are half the size of a JPEG. The format can also accommodate both lossless and lossy compression, two methods of compressing photo data with different effects in the image quality. Microsoft said adjustments can be made to color balance and exposure settings that won't discard or truncate data that has that can occur with other bitmap formats. The latest a JPEG is aging, but it's been modified over time to keep up to date. The latest is the JPEG 2000 format. So time will tell whether the HD photo can supplement JPEG, but we'll be keeping an eye on this. In the next couple of months, Adobe Systems and Microsoft will release plugins for Photoshop CS3 and CS2, for Vista, for XP, and for Apple's OS X. Also, Microsoft has built an HD photo device porting kit so hardware manufacturers can support it. So I look forward to seeing what the new HD photo looks like. We'll go back to the phone. Yes?
I'll say a lot of the digital cameras, especially at the higher end now, are using a RAW format, which doesn't do any processing in the camera, so you can do it all in your computer. And then Adobe's been pushing their portable digital negative format, better than JPEG, lossless or lossy compression, and trying to get that to be the standard, kind of like PDF is the standard for text documents.
Right, right. Our next caller is John from Rochester, New York. Welcome, John. What's your question?
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Okay, fine. I'm having a problem with the display on my monitor. I don't know. I think the kids are fooling around with it. And now I've lost contrast. I've got kind of a almost pastel colored, and I don't see the sharp black and white. So, for example, if I'm typing text into, like, on the internet on an application or something, mm-hmm. I can barely see the lines. Everything seems to be really faded. I've gone to display settings, but I have no idea how to fix it.
Have you, on the actual monitor itself, have you gone back to reset the factory defaults there?
No.
Not in Windows, but if you go right to the monitor.
Wait, is this an LCD monitor or a big tube monitor?
It's a tube monitor. It's an HP.
Yeah, quite often there's buttons on the front panel and that you can adjust your brightness and contrast and colors and temperatures. And
right. There's one there that usually, if you scroll through the menu, and each one is different, there is a set factory defaults. So if you select that, it more or less sets everything back, you know, to the average, brightness and, the whole nine yards.
There's also the possibility that someone accidentally or on purpose, as a joke, turned on some of the accessibility options. We run into this a lot on the Mac, where you can change your contrast, you can reverse black and white instead of white and black, and it's part of the user accessibility setting. So if the in XP, there's often a little a symbol of a handicap wheelchair symbol, and that's the accessibility control panel. Mm-hmm. See if anything got funny changed in there.
But first, I'd start with the monitor itself. Open up its own little control panel, an on-screen control panel that is actually part of the monitor itself. You'll need to look in your manual to figure out exactly how to do that on any particular model. And then you can adjust all the settings there. But equally importantly, you can reset it to the factory defaults.
So your color balances and everything else just
right.
Come out nicer.
All right, our next caller is Rich from Webster, New York. Welcome, Rich. What's your question?
Hello, I actually didn't have a question. It was more a piece of information for that previous caller who was having trouble seeing all the computers on his network.
Oh, yeah.
Excellent. We love that.
I don't think it was suggested to have him check the network configuration to make sure Windows file and printer sharing was enabled on all the computers.
Well, he was using Windows XP.
Okay, well, that still applies.
Yeah, you could. That's interesting. Yeah, because you could mark a folder to be shared, and it should stop and tell you got to turn sharing on first. But it may not have.
Should. Yeah. I've seen it not do that. So.
Yeah. That's a good point, Rich.
Okay, that was it.
Yeah. No, thank you.
Thanks. Oh, I love it when people call up and talk to each other. So, Paul, if you're still listening, and if you're not, I can't imagine why you wouldn't be. There's your answer from Rich. Thank you, Rich. Our next caller is Wayne from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Wayne. What's your question?
Hi, good show, fellas.
Thank you.
I went on a vacation a little while ago and took a lot of pictures, digital camera pictures, and I took some video clips with it, too. And, of course, they come out apparently in a MOV format.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I try and put pictures on the disc, I don't have a problem. But is there a way to put the video clips onto a disc so I can show them on a regular TV?
You have to use a video authoring program to make a video DVD because they're videos, they're not pictures.
Okay.
So something like Easy DVD Creator on Windows or iDVD on the Mac, you have to make a video DVD to play on a DVD player.
Right. Yeah. So basically you can point it at those files and say, I want those to be playable on a DVD player, and it will create the DVD for you. It's not a terribly hard thing to do. You just have to have the right software to do it.
I'm sure I have probably three or four of those programs. I just haven't looked at them in quite a while. It's a Windows format is what I have.
Right. Yeah. So you should have them. All it is a matter of picking the right one and learning how it works.
Okay. I guess that'll do it.
There you
all
go.
Right.
Thanks, Wayne.
Much.
Our next caller is Lance on a cell phone. Welcome, Lance. What's your question?
How do you know I'm on a cell phone?
We know everything, Lance.
one quick comment. I need to find out more about that JPEG. Is there a site I can look for it?
For the HD photo format, you mean?
Yeah.
You give us your question, and I'll give you the site at the end.
Well, my question is on safe mode on my wife's Dell notebook with Windows 98. But since I installed AVG on it, things have been going from bad to worse, and now it boots in safe mode, and I can't get out of it.
All right, what you want to do, Lance, is while it's in safe mode, uninstall AVG.
Yeah.
And
I
then
tried, and it didn't work.
It didn't work?
It didn't. Did not uninstall. I mean, it said it did, but it's still there.
Well, you might want to also check, while you're in safe mode, go into MS Config.
Yeah.
And check in there in the startup bar. Make sure nothing AVG is checked as to items to start along with the startup group. The other thing you might want to try, instead of using AVG, which most of the time it works with 98, but if you're having an issue with that, depending on what version of Windows she's on, Antivir is another good one that will work with Windows 98. And you just do a Google search for Antivir, and it'll take you to that website, and it's another freebie that you can, I know, works well with Windows 98.
All right. And as far as those websites for HD photo,
I've got Microsoft's own announcement already in the link list.
And there's a nice article on Wikipedia about them. So those are in our link list. If you go to our website, soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, click on the links tab. And from there, number three on that list is the list of sites mentioned weekly on the show. And that particular link will be right in there. So give that a shot, and
you
should get all the information you need. Our next caller is Dario from Rochester. Welcome, Dario. What's your question?
How you doing? I don't have a question. I just wanted to talk about the time change.
Sure.
I have Windows 98,
mm-hmm.
and I've been trying for a number of days to try to find a program to do it.
One of our folks in our chat room mentioned evidently there is a patch out there, which I was unaware of myself.
Not for Microsoft, I bet.
You know, it's got to be third party. It's www.intellidmin.
Yeah.
I'll post it in a minute.
Yeah, it's...
Well, now, here you go, Nick.
Okay,
you gotta...
but here's what I found, okay?
Okay.
I finally found out that on your 98 installation disk, okay, there is a program called TZ Edit. It's right on your disk. And you go in there, and it asks you for the time you want to start and the time you want to stop, you know, date and time that you want to start and stop. And it switched the whole program around. And now I got my Eastern, you know, zone where I am. And it goes and it does the correct thing. It's right on your disk.
Yep. It's called TZ Edit.
TZ Edit. Yep. What I did is I put the installation disk in because after I read about it, then I did a search for TZ Edit on that disk. And it came right up with it and then gave me, you know, you have to have your information in front of you.
Yeah.
What time you want to change back and forth, you know? And it's right there on your disk.
Cool.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Dario.
Take care now.
You too.
I know that a bunch of people were using TZ Edit. I didn't realize it was right on the 98 disk. That's nice to know.
Me neither. Well, I haven't played with it. I mean, I'm still playing around with Vista, you know, still learning the unique features of Vista.
It is that, isn't it? Our next caller is Matt from Brighton, New York. Welcome, Matt. What's your question?
It's Max. But that's okay. How are you guys?
Great.
Having a problem with Outlook. I'm running Windows XP and running Microsoft Office Standard XP. And when I go to try to shut down, I get Outlook.exe is still running in the background, and the task manager can't shut it down. And the only way I can shut the computer down is to actually hold the button in myself.
How long have you waited for this to stop?
It's been weeks.
No. In terms of any individual shutdown.
Well, you know how it says it will shut automatically in, you know, X seconds, and then it goes off, and then nothing happens.
Max, one question
for you. Yeah, but have you waited 5 minutes, 10 minutes, an hour?
No, I'd say maybe a minute, that's all.
No, wait at least 10 minutes and see what happens.
It might be doing is attempting to synchronize something on your system with something on the server, and once it's done that, you won't have that problem anymore.
Yeah, it's just say he's not giving it enough time to do that. I've seen that happen.
Right, and also
times.
With a lot of them, for example, they empty the trash. It can be set to empty the trash when you shut down.
Okay.
And if you at any point dumped an amazing amount of stuff in the trash or threw away something with a couple of big programs or whatever, that will take a while to empty the trash, and you may not be just simply waiting long enough.
Well, the other thing I've seen, too, is if he's doing some download updates, you know, sometimes they don't finish installing until after you go to shut down, and the screen doesn't always kick right over to don't shut off your machine right away. It might get stuck on one program, and behind the scenes, it might be doing some other updates, and he's not allowing that to happen.
So we would counsel a little bit of patience in this particular case, Max.
Try that, you know, see how long it takes to actually shut down itself.
Yeah,
let us know how you make out next week.
I appreciate it.
All right, no, thank you.
All right, thanks, Max. Now wait, he's going to call back next week and say, last Sunday after I called you, I shut it off. I haven't touched it in a week and it's still up.
I wouldn't wait that long, but I mean, you know, within a half hour, shut down in a half hour, then he's got an issue.
Yeah, well, it could be half an hour, depends on how... on where his Exchange server is and how fast it is.
That was never 5 minutes just then.
Stop it. Our next caller is Dave.
Well, I'm going to say if his internet connection has shut down before Outlook finishes shutting down, then Outlook will never finish.
There is that. Yeah. But that's usually not going to happen, but I won't say it won't. Our next caller is Dave from Greece, New York. Welcome, Dave. What's your question?
Hello there. Thank you. I have a question. I'm running Windows XP on my computer. And recently, I installed a Norton antivirus on the computer. Now my computer is very slow to boot up, and it's also very slow to react whenever I wish to hyperlink or whenever I wish to even close out a program.
That is an undocumented feature of Norton. That's correct and expected when you install Norton on your computer.
Yeah, unfortunately, the latest version of Norton antivirus is, what's the word I'm looking for? A pig! And it just sucks up all your system resources and simply will not release them.
Yeah, if you don't have a 4 gigahertz processor and 2 gigs of RAM, don't bother.
Yeah, I personally Unless you have a super high-end machine, I just simply cannot recommend it.
It causes more issues because it's trying to do things that Windows is already doing.
Right.
I see. All right, well, maybe I shouldn't have put that on there, but I didn't know that, you know?
Right. Now, it's not a big problem. Yeah. Take it off, use something else. You certainly don't want to be without an antivirus product.
Right, well, I had a lot better luck with McAfee.
There you go.
I have another question. My computer, for a while, has been acting up on the video end of things. It won't run video very well. I don't know why.
Well, I would start with Norton. It is possible that Norton is, every time you run a video, it's checking every byte of that video for viruses, which would slow things down considerably. So let's start with the Norton before we start borrowing other trouble. Go and fix that first and see if that doesn't solve everything. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour, and you're listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I just burnt that song and a couple others to Crazy, Save a Horse, Ride a Cowboy, a bunch of them to Eminem, also my favorite CD mix. I put it in, and the wife's going, looks at me and goes, where did you get these?
You need, what is it, whiskey for the men and beer for the horses?
Yeah. I love this song, go crazy.
All right, it's 44 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites. All of you folks who are desperately in waiting for the for Patch Tuesday, this is, of course, Microsoft's monthly visitor. This week, you can relax. There will be no Patch Tuesday this month. Microsoft announced on Thursday they are skipping it because they don't have any fixes for the users. In their monthly bulletin, they
simply
said...
Not to say there aren't any problems.
Exactly. Microsoft simply said no new Microsoft security bulletins will be released on March 13th, 2007. This is the first time in 18 months that Microsoft has not issued at least one security update in a scheduled patch rollout. Since January 2003, only 3 months have been without security fixes. Although no software will be patched this month, that doesn't mean Microsoft have nothing to do. According to security organizations, there are numerous problems still unfixed. EI Digital Security's zero-day tracker, for example, shows 5 vulnerabilities that were reported to Microsoft but not patched. The SANS Institute's Internet Storm Center, meanwhile, lists 9 bugs on its most recent missing Microsoft patches chart. However, Microsoft said it will issue several unspecified, non-security, high-priority updates. Last month, they released 12 updates, which fixed 20 vulnerabilities. In January, they issued 4 security bulletins that patched 10 bugs.
All right, I got a problem.
We know that. Oh, I'm sorry. Which problem would this be?
You know, they run these ads right now, and I love the ads right now that Mac is doing. I got to give Mac credit. I love the Mac and the PC guy.
You're coming to a sad realization.
That security is the biggest pain in the than I care to mention.
That's the sad realization they're talking about.
Yes.
I can turn him off, but then he doesn't protect for anything.
Well, wait a minute. They're saying that this product is supposed to be more secure.
As it turns out, it's not actually.
Wait a minute. Correct me if I'm wrong. The week that it came out, they already had, I believe it was 4 or 5 holes in it that they had to get patches out there for.
Yeah. They are finding that it is not
as secure as they'd
like it to be.
But yet the thing still annoys the hell out of me that it keeps asking me to do this and do that. It's like, shut up, get out of my way.
Yep.
I'm at the same sad realization. Yep.
All right. Our next caller.
Let's do
Chris from Geneseo. Welcome, Chris. What's your question?
How's it going, guys?
Good. How are you?
Not too bad. I did a system restore on my computer a couple days ago.
Yep.
And it said that the system restore was reversible if I didn't like what it did.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not reversible. When I try to undo my system restore, it says it's unable to.
Well, Chris, when you go back to, say you did it today.
Yep.
And you just did it, say, 20 minutes ago.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see in that list for that, when you go to, say, you know, the restore, and you go back to that calendar, and you look at today's date, do you have a couple points there that you can select?
Yeah, I went back to the furthest date I could. It was December 4th.
But no, I'm not saying the furthest date. I'm saying within that date, there's usually be you can sometimes pick one or two or even three of the time frames within that date.
Yep.
Did you pick, say, like 8 o'clock this morning if that was one of the times?
I'm not even sure what I did.
Yeah, because see, within a day, you know, it'll default to the current one. So that's why it's not. But if you pick today's date, say you did it today, and there's an 8 o'clock, a 10 o'clock, and a 1 o'clock update. If you want to go back to the one originally that you started with today, you select the 8 o'clock one within that day and say restore it from that point in time.
Oh, okay.
Not only the date, but the actual time. Because there are, you know, it doesn't do it just at one time. If you do something, say, add new software or do an update, you can have the normal startup of your machine in the morning, and then, say, at 10 o'clock you did a Microsoft update. That would also be listed, too, because that made a change to your system.
Right.
So you got to go back to that first instance within that day and select that one.
Okay, and the reason I did the system restore was because My computer is no longer recognizing me as an eBay member or a MySpace member. I'd go on, I'd try to sign my password, and it would say, you need to be a member, but I am a member.
Right, but you would need, what happened is you had set a cookie when you went to those sites, and now by going back to a previous date, you've wiped out that cookie. So now you have to log in again using your username and password.
This is before the restore, though.
Even so, you need to just log back in again as your user. It could be, but it's more likely the fact that he's just got to log back in again. Our next, we're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. At 49 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Call Wham now at 222-1180, star 11 in chat.
I have no shame.
And the Wham Morning News.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve
Love
Ray.
That too.
And I'm Rob Linton.
What? No Bonanza theme for me?
What was that with you on the morning news there?
There are words to the theme for Bonanza, and they wanted me to sing them. So I did, and they saved it. It's 54 minutes after the hour, and we're
find
listening
that,
to
Rob. Find the whole thing now.
Oh, we have plenty of blackmail material saved up.
I have no shame on the morning show. For those of you who don't know, I do the entertainment reports on the morning show.
And it's entertaining.
Quarter to seven and a quarter, about 20 to 7:28 every morning, and we're having fun. Apparently, that little sensor in the back of your head that says "Oh no" doesn't work at a quarter to seven in the morning for me. There's a little voice that
not
says,
enough caffeine.
Oh, no, you do not want to sing.
Well,
the
you work about
22
and a half hours a day anyway.
Yeah,
so,
I mean,
typically you don't have any sleep.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah. And so by the time I get in there, I'm seeing colors I haven't seen since the 60s.
Well, it's funny because when you first started doing it, I turned on Wham one morning not realizing you were doing it.
Yeah.
And I heard you and I'm like, oh my God, what is going on?
Oh, shoot, it's Sunday. I'm late for work.
I was like, I'm late for work. What's going on? And then he started talking about movies, and I'm like, whew, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm doing that now, because apparently I'm just a guy who can't say
You cannot say it.
I cannot. A California attorney claims that he has unraveled part of the mystery behind a questionable software program and is prepared to go to court. Attorney Joseph M. Bachner filed a class action suit last September in California Superior Court in Santa Clara County against two men the suit alleges are behind WinFixer, a reported security software package. The lawsuit names Mark J. Cohen of Florida and was amended last week to add James Reno of Ohio as an additional defendant, Bachner said. It seeks compensation and a halt to the distribution of WinFixer, among other remedies. The suit was filed on behalf of Beatrix Ochoa, a mother of two who paid $40 for WinFixer after it badgered her with repeated pop-up warnings that her computer had security threats. The program eventually rendered her computer's hard drive unusable. The suit counts about another 100 anonymous victims. So there's a problem with a product called WinFixer.
Well, it puts the junk on your machine, and then it puts the pop-ups there.
You sort of have to admire their gall to infect your machine with spyware and then hold it at ransom to remove it.
Yeah, you may admire their gall, but that's also illegal in these United States. And so you can admire their little prison uniforms once they get caught. Now, what was it you were trying to show me on...
I
found the words for the Bonanza theme.
Sure, we'll sing it all together later on in the show, maybe. Or not, as the case may be.
I'll sing solo. Solo, you can't hear me.
Exactly. Our next caller is Bill from Webster, New York. Welcome, Bill. What's your question?
Hey, guys. I got a question about Zone Alarm. I've always wondered about. I've been using it for years, and my question is, when you have it installed on a computer with multiple users, I notice that when you log on to your profile, Zone Alarm loads up in the system tray. Now, the question is, when you log off, if you leave the computer on and just log off, is Zone Alarm still protecting you or not?
It should. It installs as a process.
Yeah.
But you won't get any warnings that anything's happening because there's nobody to warn.
What's loading is when you log in, what loads is the front end.
Okay.
The back end is always running, so it's always protecting you. But as Steve says, that front end lets you change things, see the warnings, et cetera, and those are not, and that is not loaded until you log on as an individual.
As each user, based upon what they've said to allow and block.
Yeah, I understand that. I was just wondering in the log off mode if you are protected from hackers. So that's...
Yes.
Okay, great. I also wanted to comment. I've used Anti-VIR for years. It's a wonderful program, and I've never had a problem on a computer to put it on as long as the updates were done.
Yep. No, it's another good one.
And we got that on our link list now, too.
Yep. Yeah. I've not tried Anti-VIR. I like AVG. I've been playing with Avast.
Well,
the thing I like about Avast is every day my machine says to me, your virus definitions have been updated.
Well, see, cool. I found Anti-VIR to work very well with companies. There was a dentist's office that Rob knows about. And we wound up working with Laura's machine there because the rest of the antivirus programs wanted to scan this whole data file for this dental program. So it slowed it down. By going to Anti-VIR, we were able to shut that feature off. It didn't scan the whole thing, and it made it a lot faster.
Right.
The whole system sped right up.
All right, we are done for another week. I want to apologize to everyone to whom we did not get call in earlier and more often next week. I want
to post in the forums.
Post in the forums. I want to thank everyone who did call in. And particularly the folks who did yeoman service in the chat this week. I'll be shutting that down in just a minute or two. I want to thank Dave Enright and Steve Ray and the mighty, great, phenomenal Rob Linton, who, you know, we don't pay him. We just have to compliment him once or twice a week on the air for not finding the entire clip of me singing the theme song to Bonanza. I'm Nick Francesco, and we will be back here next week on the greatest computer show in the known universe. Thanks for listening. We're Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.